That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday. And we got my man, Jake Arthur, on the line with us tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about everything. Jake, thanks for stopping by tonight, my guy. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, buddy? Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Love to have you on, man. So we got a little bit to talk about a little bit of everything, to be quite honest with you. So we're doing these call-ins, and I told everybody that basically, you know, you call in, we're going to put it on the show, and then everybody's getting an opportunity to win either an Inside the Pylon draft guide or an NDT scouting draft guide for free. If they call in, they get thrown in the mix. And basically, we got another call in, and his name's Griffin. So listen to this and tell me what you think.
Hi, Matt. This is Griffin calling from Nevada. My question is regarding, what do you think the Colts are going to do in the first round? Do you think that they will address edge, inside linebacker, or corner specifically? I've heard you talk about this over your shows the last couple times, and I couldn't really get a clear, definitive answer. If I had to say anything, I would prefer going after a corner in the first round, and then maybe Joe Mixon or a running back in the second round. Is there any more insight that you can give on that on the next show? I'm a big-time fan. Thank you very much for this mailbag opportunity, and I'm looking forward to the show. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Jake, what are your first thoughts on that? Griffin's wanting to know what the Colts are going to do in the first round. Now, the way that he asks it, it doesn't, you know, as you heard, it doesn't sound like he wants to know what we would do. He wants to know what we think the Colts would do. What's your shot on that?
I think we've got to be most realistic. Teams don't draft on positional need. Even if it's in the first round, they've had all this time to turn things over. It's always going to be best player available. And when you've got a draft like this where there's so many, it's such a weird quarterback draft where it's pretty top heavy. There's about four guys at the top that a lot of teams are going to want, but none of them are surefire first round guys. You're going to have teams probably moving around the draft trying to get their guys, these quarterbacks included. When you consider that, the Colts may not even stay at 15. Mm-hmm. But if they do, some of the names they've been linked to that I would think would be highly rated on their board, Reuben Foster and Jonathan Allen from Alabama, both of them have reasons, mainly off the field, to be sliding down. Foster's is more character related. Jonathan Allen's is more injury concern related. They say he's got arthritis in his shoulder, so that may scare some teams. You've also got, if they really value offensive line, you could see Forrest Lamp there as their pick. Running back has been a big thing, and I think there are valid rumors going with that, whether it be Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, Leonard Fournette, if for some reason he's there, even Dalvin Cook. You could see that, but I think another big option is that they trade down. There are teams later in the first round that will want to move into the teens to get their guy. And in a lot of cases, if you consider someone around 19 to 22 moves up and wants to get the Colts' 15th pick, that could get the Colts an extra third-round pick. Chris Ballard has already said he wants to accumulate as many picks as possible. So I can almost guarantee at some point you're going to see the Colts trading back to get more picks. First round could be it. This draft is so deep that they might not feel like they're going to miss out on any truly elite talent by moving back, you know, five or so spots.
So let's say the Colts stay at 15 then. Who out of all the mock drafts you've seen and read and looked through, who's your guy at 15?
Oh, this isn't so much based off mock drafts as much as it is just my own studying of it. But Reuben Foster is my guy. To me, he's the second best defensive player in the entire draft. On the field, he has no business leaving the top 10. I understand why teams might drop him on their boards a little bit because of maybe the crowd he runs with or past injury concerns or his current shoulder. But the guy is the type of defender that you build a defense around. And for my money, the Colts cannot afford to pass up on a guy like that.
So you think that, I mean, you legit think, A, that he's going to be there at 15, and B, you think that if that's the case, that they take him. I mean, for sure, right?
I can't say that I for sure think he'll be there. I believe in his type of situation that we see every year where a guy inexplicably just starts dropping down boards way too far. I mean, Miles Jack was a top five, top 10 lock last year, and he was there in the second round. Mm-hmm. Crazy stuff just happens. We don't know. I can't say for sure I think he'll be there, but I think it's realistic that he could be there. And yeah, if he does, that would be my guy. If we're going for someone who would probably most realistically be there, Derek Barnett and Takaris McKinley are a couple of my guys. I really love them as pass rushers. Hassan Reddick should be there as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could go wrong with any of those guys. Though I would love a trade down to accumulate more picks, I can almost guarantee there's going to be one of my highly rated guys there for them to get, and I'd probably just prefer that they stick to that.
If my simple answer is this: if the Colts trade back, my options are open as far as any position. If the Colts stay at 15, and I mean, in my opinion, Foster's off the board by then. I think that Barnett's off the board by then, to be quite honest with you. I think that he goes to the Saints. I think that there's a lot of these guys. Now, I think that Hassan Reddick is honestly on the board at this point. I really believe that he is. But I don't think the Colts go inside linebacker with the options that they've got second and third. And I know that we're not basing – that they don't base their draft off by position. It's the big board that they've got. I truly believe that Gerrion Conley is the guy for the Colts at 15. I absolutely do. I think it's a corner. I think that it's Conley. And if it's not Conley, I mean, it could just as easily be, Quincy Wilson from Florida, am I right?
Yeah.
Quincy Wilson from Florida. I mean, one of those two guys right there give the Colts a huge upgrade. Now, Wilson doesn't necessarily fit perfectly to a T or anything like that, but he's got the press part of the man down. And I just think that those two guys are – I think that those two guys are actually a lot higher on people's boards than a lot of us in the draft community or just the, you know, just casual observers. I really think that a lot of teams probably have them pretty high on their board. I think edge is – I think all – I mean, edge is a huge need. I don't think that Tack McKinley is the pick in the first round, quite honestly. I don't dislike him. I just can't put my finger on what I think about him, to be quite honest with you. But, it, you know, trade back and everything's on the board. And I say that because you trade back, then you can, you're getting another pick this year. You have that many more options to get whatever position you want to kind of open your board up a little bit more and be a little freer with what you do, because there are, you know, for example, if they do trade back, my assumption is that they go inside linebacker if they have one. Jared Davis, I'm loving this dude. If Hassan Reddick's still there, if they were to trade back maybe a small handful of spots, I think that they go that route, possibly, because there are second and third round corners in here. There are second and third round edge guys in here. There's second round offensive linemen in here. Yeah, whatever their options are, if they trade back, I think that opens their board up. That's just my opinion. But I think that if they feel that they can't trade back and they get stuck at 15, I think they go corner, because that's one of the most pressing needs at this point. At the moment, right now, we've got Vontae Davis and Rashawn Melvin you know, left and right corner. And I think that's a major issue any way you look at it. You can't afford to really sleep on these guys, because if you're going to bring in a guy that you think is a lockdown possibility, or at least has the possibility and the potential to be a lockdown corner, you do that right away. You get that out of the way. And then, you know, whatever you do the rest of the board, you do the rest of the board. Trade back, I think that they'll settle, you know, on, you know, just about anywhere. And then they'll go, that'll, like I said, that'll open their board up. Not necessarily that they'll stick to inside linebacker. I'm just saying that that would open up inside linebacker, in my opinion, as a first round option. Whereas I think it's a second or a third round option should they stay at 15. But you know what? Second and third, you know, possible trade back situations all over the place there too. Maybe, depending on, you know, how stacked a lot of these teams think this draft is. You know, the other part, Griffin, to Griffin's question there, was what do we think in, you know, the second round and stuff like that. He's high on Joe Mixon. Now, you and I, you know, we talked about this pre-show, and Griffin, thank you for the call, my guy. You're going to be in the drawing now for the draft guides, and I've got your information. I appreciate the call, and thank you. If you guys want to call in, it's 574-516-2881. Give me a call. Get yourself eligible to make win one of those draft guides. Jake, now let's talk about Mixon. What, you know, I wrote a piece the other day that was for Stampede Blue that kind of touched on guys that I felt like that would not be on the Colts board. Now, a lot of the, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily agree with me, and that's okay. But Mixon, after, you know, I heard the Peter King interview with him and Ballard, it really led me to believe, you know, when a guy like Chris Ballard, who's as thorough as anybody, says that he hasn't gotten to the point yet in the evaluation to where he sees whether Mixon has shown enough remorse in the situation, then that tells me that there, I mean, he just said he hasn't delved that far into it, you know, and 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks left into the draft. And that was at the owner's meeting. So it wasn't like that was something 2 months out, you know what I mean? And he just happened to put that up. Mm-hmm. I just don't see how that leads any possibility that Joe Mixon could be on the Colts board. Now we did get some news recently, you know, well, kind of news. It's a little, in my opinion, it's a little far-fetched, but you have different thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on what we've heard in the past 24 hours?
Yeah. So my views honestly have really kind of waned in the last 24 hours. 'Cause like you, when I heard Chris Ballard's appearance on Peter King's podcast, when Peter King was discussing guys with red flags and whether they deserve second chances, you know, he asked Ballard about Mixon. And then to me, it sounded completely organic by Ballard and not thought, you know, pre-thought out. He said, you know, honestly, I just haven't gotten far enough into Mixon to know, you know, to have an answer. And like you said, it was 2 or 3 weeks until the draft at that point. If he was going to be doing investigating on Mixon, which obviously any team looking to draft him would do, then he would know. He would have an answer. Maybe he just, who knows how plugged in Ballard is to reading things. After Ryan Grigson left, we kind of found out that Ryan Grigson did read a lot of his own news clippings. Maybe Ballard is more plugged into what people are saying about him than we know. If he is, then he knows Mixon to the Colts has been a natural fit because of the past with guys like Tyreek Hill. So to me right away, I was like, okay, no, he's off the board. They're not considering him if Ballard isn't, if he doesn't know anything about him really. But then Mike Freeman's piece this morning, Wednesday, where he talks with an anonymous scout from the NFC. Now, he's obviously not anonymous to Mike. He goes to him every single year for a take on every team in the first round. And, I mean, the guys from the NFC, and he said, first thing he said was, I think this is where Christian McCaffrey goes, is to the Colts at 15. I've heard that a lot. I mean, I think we've all seen running backs mock to the Colts a ton over the last few months. It was Dalvin Cook at one point. Christian McCaffrey kind of took over as well as Joe Mixon. But that was more of a second, third round. But I was always suspicious over the past, you know, really since the combine, that Mixon would find his way into the first round, because Daniel Jeremiah comes out and he says, I've talked to someone from just about every team and they all say Mixon is going in the second round. You know, after the combine, it is the weirdest thing for a guy to not be invited to the combine and for his stock to skyrocket because of it is insane. Because at the introductory press conferences, someone from the Lions was like, you know, it kind of sucks that he's not here because we all want to talk to him. And that almost boosted him up to where everyone's like, yeah, let's get more interested in him and find more out. So his stock started to rise. And then Daniel Jeremiah says he's a second round lock. And I'm just thinking, you know, he's already a first round talent. If he didn't have this whole past hanging over him of this incident, he would be going in the first round.
Yeah.
So teams are going to be infatuated with him. He's made a ton of visits. He's going in the first round. If a team wants to make sure they're getting him, he's going in the mid to late first round. That's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
So to me, I already kind of had a natural match of the Colts and Mixon, because if you just take Ballard into consideration and his open mind with guys with past character red marks, even violence against women, if it's an isolated incident, you know, he's willing to have an open mind about that and kind of study things. So that makes sense. Colts need a running back. He's the style of running back they need, because he's a three down back. And then with this scout saying that the Colts are actually heavily looking into Mixon, it just completely makes sense. So considering the scout is from the NFC, he must really know something if he knows the Colts are looking this hard into Joe Mixon. That's kind of my thought process on that.
Okay, let me take this from like kind of the opposite point of view from where I was a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Now, my thought process was that Mixon's just not even on the board, right? They're not even thinking about it because he hadn't gotten to that point yet. So let's say that since then, that's exactly what he's doing. He's diving in, delving in on this guy, wanting to do as much investigative work as humanly possible. To me, that doesn't mean, and I'm going by what the scout apparently said to Freeman, that to me does not mean that the Colts are high on him. Let me rephrase that. It doesn't mean that the Colts are hot for him. It just means the Colts want to find out about him. That the Colts are doing the work that they hadn't done, or Ballard in specific, is doing the work that he hadn't done previously. Maybe he just got around to it late. Maybe he just got around to it late. That seems odd to me, that a guy like Ballard, who's that thorough, and if there's a guy that needs to be investigated, you basically have, if we're talking first-round talents, you got Malik Hooker, Dalvin Cook, and Joe Mixon. Is there anybody else that you can think of that need like a severe investigation in the first round?
You could probably consider Reuben Foster buy the off-field issues. Tim Williams.
Yeah, Williams for sure. I just don't see how that wasn't done already. However, let's say it was super thorough with all the other guys, he's just now getting a mix in because that's the last guy that they're going to worry about delving in, because he has like the most serious issue, you could say, as far as that, the most visible serious issue. Maybe that's not what's going on right now. Maybe he just knows that the Colts are like really just diving in as hardcore as they can to find everything they can about Mixon. To me, that's way more plausible than to say in a week the Colts did not have enough information to know if he was remorseful about his situation, to now they're gung-ho over him and they're going to take him at 15. That to me is asinine. I mean, that type of window from a guy like that, to me, that is my opinion here, is that that's either the guy had a couple beers in him when he was talking about it, or Freeman took his comments a little too much to heart with what he said, or is projecting them in a way to make it sound like it's way more concrete than it actually is. That's legit my opinion.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And another part of it, I thought, you know, a lot of time the GM will have a right-hand man, and I don't know, maybe Jimmy Ray is Ballard's right-hand man now, because Ray was such a respected candidate for other GM jobs. With guys with character issues, you might let your right-hand man take point on that. But Ballard has already stressed that when you've got a guy with issues of this caliber, that it's got to be an organizational decision to move forward with that player.
Yep.
If Jim Irsay has to sign off on it, Coach Pagano and Ballard, then it's going to be Ballard that's probably doing the brunt work. Yep. Because if he's going to put his neck out for someone, then he's probably going to be the one doing the homework. And it's just weird for him to have such a non-committal response. Literally, I want to say the podcast aired April 9th, and Freeman's article came out today, 3 days later. Right. That's such a huge, drastic shift.
It aired the 9th, but that podcast was recorded at the owner's meeting. So
the owner's
meeting, a week previous. So it's like a 10-day difference.
Exactly, yeah. So it's still not a very big window at all. It's either what is going on since that interview, or is there smoke? Like, what is going on? Because that's two totally different viewpoints.
Right. And if now, a lot of the comments and stuff that I saw on that were, oh, this is a smoke screen. I'm sorry. There was nothing about the way that conversation happened telling me that was a smoke screen.
No, it seemed very organic to me. It seemed like a normal conversation. Like, I mean, I know Peter King as the interviewer has to be kind of in charge of the conversation, but like neither of them seemed to be trying to pull anything over on the other. They're having a normal conversation. Ballard, yeah. I thought, was answering King's questions very fairly and thoroughly.
Yeah.
So it's a really weird situation now, especially because that would be the first I've heard, although I did have suspicions of Mixon going in the first, I haven't heard of anyone talking about him going as high as 15.
Yeah. Me,
it's just a weird situation.
It is. No, don't get me wrong. I don't want him. I don't want a running back, period. I just don't in the first round. I just think there's too many guys after that. I mean, but, you know, we do this every year, Jake, whether we're at your place for the draft.
Yeah.
Or whether we're just sitting here on the conversation, texting back and forth, or whatever the case may be. We do this every year. We have a definitive thought process on what we want or what we would like, and then something else happens, and then we both, and I think a lot of Colts fans are similar, we will find our way into digging the pick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least typically it seems that's the way it is. We'll find a way to smooth out what we didn't like about it, in other words.
Because we want it to go well.
Right. We're hopeful.
And yeah, exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see what goes on. Now, there's a couple other guys that we talked about off air that we wanted to bring up that have been kind of one maybe a first-round guy, at least in theory, and the other guy's like a second- or third-round guy. We'll start with Charles Harris first. You and I are right together on this because you aren't digging Charles Harris either, and I can't find a reason for myself to want him in the first round, nor can I see really why people think that he's such a first half of the first round guy. It just, to me, it doesn't compute, and it doesn't sound like that it does with you either.
No, I mean, I try to keep an open mind. I read a lot of scouting reports. I'm on Twitter a lot, and I like to see other people's viewpoints. And I myself watch a lot of film on these guys. I've tried to absorb Charles Harris. I really have. I've watched all of his tapes on Draft Breakdown. I've watched his tapes on different days. I've watched all tapes in a day. I'll watch one day. Like I've come up with every combination of ways to watch his film because I want to try to like keep an open mind and like maybe I'll feel differently this day, but I just don't get it. Like that's cool that he tested well at his pro day and all that, but like, where's the productivity? Right. I don't see a consistent enough playmaker on the field to, he doesn't get me excited. Like, I feel like he's out of the action too much. I don't know.
Yeah.
He makes plays here and there, but it's not consistent enough for me.
No, me either. Even when he's the obvious designated pass rusher, I mean, in the defense, it just, there are times that he pops off screens like, whoa, there it is. Now,
yeah.
It makes you want to keep watching. And then it's literally two games later that you see the next one. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's just there's no consistency with him whatsoever. If there was anything I would say about him, I legit think he is a strong side linebacker in the NFL. I don't think he is, you know, your rush linebacker. I think that he could contribute in that way in some way, shape, or form. I don't think that's going to be his calling card, though, at the next level. And, I mean, the one thing I guess that I would say that I liked about him is the way that he would come off blocks and move towards the line of scrimmage and come inside a little bit to help against the run. But even that was inconsistent. I just, man, I don't know. A lot of these guys that I watch, I have no preconceived notions of them. So, you know, when I go into watching them, though, I definitely do pick guys that I'm hearing about in the past to watch because that makes them interesting to me. You know, I want to see what everybody else is seeing. And man, there's so many guys that I don't see what anybody else sees. There's so many. And I don't know if it's, I mean, I played a lot of football in my life and I just don't get it. I mean, Harris is one of them that I don't get it. I don't see anything on him that says he's going to be a starter in the NFL. I mean, he might be. I mean, and you never know how some of these guys like transition from college to the next level. Maybe there is a trait that's in there that I'm not seeing because I'm too worried about how he fires off the line, what his hand usage is. What somebody else is seeing, I'm not seeing.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have any bias against him or anything. As a pass rusher who is projected going round one, I should want him to do well because I know the Colts need that, you know?
Right.
And I know the Colts, there's been a lot of talk actually about the Colts and Charles Harris in the first round. So I should have every reason to want him to look good. I just don't see it. Like, you can kind of, one of my favorite guys, you can kind of flip him and Harris, Derek Barnett, all the production shows up all the time on tape.
Yep.
Terrible testing, whether he was sick or was injured, whatever, even if he was perfectly healthy. You can see him on film, and he doesn't look like a guy that's going to test well.
Yeah.
Flip side, Charles Harris, not a ton of production, not a ton of consistency, but he wound up testing well at his pro day. Give me Barnett every day. Like, I don't – if you look at the analytics and if someone's going to be a force player or they test well, they had great three cone, whatever – I will always want to see how they actually played and how often they made plays.
Right.
And I don't see how people could like hate Derek Barnett, but really like Charles Harris.
Yeah.
It doesn't click.
Football players come first before athletes. Yeah. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. I mean, great. Here's the thing. And I know that anybody who's anybody has said this in the past, but one, you find out if they're a good football player. Two, you find out what kind of a premier athlete they are because that ultimately helps people project their ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and outside of that, I mean, look, if they're a terrible athlete or not a great athlete or just not, you know, if they're not one of those guys that are in the top 75% of spark scores or just whatever, I don't know. I mean, what does it matter? I mean, watch the guy. He's dominating people, you know?
Exactly.
And that's the thing. I mean, like Derek Rivers, I didn't know whether he was going to be a phenomenal guy at the combine or not, but I love his tape. That guy can play football a lot and well. Another guy, Tyus Bowser, who is an elite athlete, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know where his spider is, or his web is actually, but you can see his athleticism on tape. You know what he did at the combine and everything else, but. I'm man, dude. Give me Tyus Bowser 100 out of 100 times over Charles Harris.
All right, I see more potential and versatility with Bowser. Bowser dropped into coverage all the time at Houston.
Yes.
It's like he was so versatile they couldn't put him at one spot and let him develop. Yeah. They're like, that'd be great if we could get this guy to be a full time pass rusher, but he can cover, so gotta drop him into coverage.
I mean, is there anything? Does that not – I mean, is there anything that transitions better to the Colts' defensive scheme than that? I mean
– Him and Hassan Reddick are very similar where they're very good pass rushers. So, like, regardless if they move to a primary position of off-ball linebacker, their team is going to put them on the outside to rush the passer probably frequently depending on the situation because they're so good at so many things.
Yeah. I mean – the one thing that I expected to see with Bowser's tape was when he would go inside on and when he would twist on a stunner or whatever like that, I expected him to get hung up a lot on the interior defensive line. And he didn't. Mm-hmm. He did well splitting them. He'd get through, made himself skinny, and ended up creating havoc in the backfield as well. There's, man, and legit, like, we get off this Charles Harris train because there's at least six guys I'd rather have before him in the first round, maybe even in the second round as well. It just, I don't see it. I don't get it. I'm glad that you don't. But now we're going to disagree on a guy. You know, can't have all the rainbows and flowers. But you got some hot takes for me on Jordan Willis?
Yeah, just from what I've seen, I guess I'm not seeing what everybody else is. Another guy, he tested very well at the combine. But to me, that is not what it looks like on tape. I don't know. He looks like he's not quick enough to the action, and he falls behind the ball a lot. You know, like, mm-hmm. the ball carrier can just fall, you know, go right up the line, and he's coming up behind. To me, he's just a step behind. He's not in the action enough for me, and he doesn't make a lot of plays. He doesn't dictate what happens with the ball. You know, a lot of these edge guys can come in and the ball carrier will have to change paths because of the pressure that's being put on them. And I mean, I've only seen a couple of games and I haven't finished studying him. So he could have a Solomon Thomas like turnaround for me, because I didn't like Solomon Thomas at first either. But
have you watched the Texas game?
Yeah, that's actually the last tape I watched of him. I think I've watched two or three, nothing substantial yet. But it was another thing. I feel like I saw the same thing I saw on the first tape, and I couldn't even tell you. Is whatever the first one is in line on Draft Breakdown for 2016, what I saw of Willis. But I just feel like he falls behind the play too much. I don't think he's in the action, and I'm still waiting to fall in love with him. I'm not done evaluating him. I'll still keep watching him. But as much as I've heard people talk about how great he is and how he's some athletic freak, I'm not seeing it yet.
Yeah, and I agree with you as far as looking at where he is athletically, what he did at the combine versus seeing the athleticism on tape. The thing, like, I mean, because he gets, when look, when he's rushing, you know, outside of the curve, bend in the edge, he gets pushed out a lot. I understand. I totally get what you're saying on that. My thing was, out of all the edges that I watched, and I'm telling you what, I never watched Myles Garrett. Didn't need to. I didn't want to watch him. There was a point. Why am I going to watch him? He's not going to teach me anything that I don't already know that he's the best in the class. So I wanted to look at everybody else, or at least a good portion of everybody else. And the one thing that I saw in Jordan Willis that I did not see out of the bulk of the rest of the edge guys in this class was his burst off the snap. Whether he was trying to climb into the interior and try to break stuff up or whatever. Now, he could get into the backfield and disrupt it without actually making the tackle. Now, I understand what you're saying. He's not in the play, so to speak. The plays pass him by sometimes, and I get that. But the dude is so strong and so quick off the ball. I just feel like that guy at some point, and I think probably in the late second round is where he goes, mid-second round. I don't think that he's a first-round guy, so I don't want to pretend that I do, because I don't. But I think in the second round that guy has so much versatility, because he could play the edge in a 3-4. I also think he'd be a fantastic sub-package guy as a defensive end. I think that he could do a lot to help the Colts pass rush however they wanted to use him. And I think that, you know, when, like you said, you don't see the athletic part of him on tape, you don't see him bending with that flexibility in his ankle and stuff like that, being able to kind of lean as he's going in there, which obviously is what people mean when they say bending the edge. Now, when I watch him, I just love his burst. I mean, constant. It's every single snap, whether it's a run snap. The only time that he doesn't do it is when he's actually the guy setting the edge. And you don't see that very often with him, because he kind of is used as a 4-3 defensive end in Kansas State's scheme. So I don't know. I really like him. I'm not going to – at no point would I expect somebody to take him in the first round, but I really liked him.
And I to his credit, I will say that in league circles, there seems to be a belief in him. Because, I mean, you and I, while we were at the Combine, we asked a scout from a 4-3 team about him, and they didn't have him on the board because he didn't really fit their scheme, because they saw him more as an outside linebacker, not a four-down defensive end. So I do think teams want to see his athleticism at play at a new home position as a stand-up player to use that athleticism. So right. I will give him credit. It's not just a draft Twitter thing. I think there's real belief from people in the league that he could be a good athletic player. I just haven't been seeing it yet.
Yeah, and it does surprise me that so many people do project him as a 3-4 outside linebacker, because he was – like in a 4-point stance a good majority of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't on twos very often. So that was something that, you know, kind of surprised me a little bit. But he just has a lot to offer. But there's a lot of guys that have a lot to offer. This is a draft where, you know, you and I, we watched, who was it, Billings fall last year or two
Andrew
years ago,
Billings,
whatever.
Yeah.
And we kind of that was something that we talked about continually. Through that, like, man, where is he going to go? We wanted the Colts to take him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a guy who I think could possibly have a similar fate. Maybe late second round, early third, because in spite of a lot of people talking about him as somewhat of a early to mid second round pick, I just don't think that he's going to be picked that high. This is a draft here where we – and every other fan base, to be honest with you, is going to be able to go, so-and-so, 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 and so-and-so are still on the board. We're good. Don't sweat it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that, to me, is going to be fun. That's a blast because, you know, unless this, you know, your team's 25 picks away and then everybody starts going on a run in a specific position that you really feel like your team needs it, you know, that's when it's going to tick you off. You'd be like, no, not right now. No, let's wait about 10 picks before we start this run, because then that's when teams get a little desperate and start trading up out of the blue. And I don't see any way that the Colts trade up for anybody in this draft. They know that next year they're not going to the Super Bowl. I mean, they know that. So why do that? Why, you know, but that is good for the Colts if other teams want to do that, because that gives them opportunity. The bad thing is when it's after the Colts pick, when the teams go on a run. What we want as Colts fans, what we collectively want as Colts fans, whether we realize it or not, is for a run to start about 15 picks before we pick, 10 to 15 picks, because once that starts, regardless of what position we need, that will allow the Colts to be in a position to, after about the second or third guy goes off the board, for teams well behind us to get greedy and come up and try to grab their guy that they really want. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, so Matt, kind of piggybacking off of the Jordan Willis talk, Todd McShay just came out with his latest mock draft. It's a three-rounder where he just compiles three picks for every team right in a row. And it's not a mock draft based off his normal intel, what he's gathering from teams and everything. It's a kind of what I would do mock draft. He just makes decisions for the teams as if he was the GM, and he uses his rankings, basically, which I really do appreciate that process because it's transparent. You know exactly what the criteria is, and he lays it all out very cleanly in the beginning. But I kind of hate his Colts haul that he had. In the first round at 15, he had Forrest Lamp. There's still this big national conception that the Colts need to invest high and heavy in the offensive line, which is just not the case. I think there's an argument for someone like Forrest Lamp for the Colts, but when I tell you the rest of the haul in these two rounds, it's not going to be a good time. Second round, Jordan Willis. There we go. third round, Ardarius Stewart, wide receiver from Alabama. Now,
what?
Yeah, Ardarius Stewart, wide receiver, third round. So I like Forrest Lamp. I like Ardarius Stewart. The jury's still out for me on Jordan Willis. I hate this haul. What do you think?
If I can use a quick aside that Dan Hansa says, come back to us, Todd McShay. You got to be kidding me. I mean, seriously? Offensive lineman and a wide receiver in the first three rounds?
For a team that needs defense as bad as it does, they give a offensive lineman first, which is a position that many people don't realize the Colts don't really need that bad. Two of the first three picks for a defensive needy team are on offense. That is crazy. And neither of them are even a running back.
Yeah. No, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Yeah. First and foremost, the Colts need nothing to do with wide receivers in this draft. Should they do it if they acquire another pick or two, sixth or seventh round? Hey, whatever. You know, at that point, it's kind of a crapshoot. You find somebody you like, you take them. And if that's the guy that you feel like is best on your board, then whatever. But this is not a situation where the Colts are anywhere near taking a wide receiver in the first three rounds. As far as I'm concerned, and if they legitimately have any wide receiver in their board, I mean, God, can we just slow down on wide receivers, man? Everybody wants to give us wide receivers. Everybody wants to give us linemen in the first round every single year in mocks. You know, can't blame them for a couple years there where the Colts legitimately needed some help. The Colts got a lot of help last year. They got some depth even now. Even if I think that the Colts probably will draft an offensive lineman. And if they do go in the first round, an offensive lineman, this is one of those situations like I was telling you about earlier. If the Colts do go first round offensive lineman, I think I'm just going to swallow it and be okay with it until we see what happens after that. But you know how it goes, man. First day is the first round only. That gives everybody the entire night to sit there and stew on the Colts taking a first round offensive lineman again. Or, you know, at least taking a first-round offensive lineman as opposed to an exciting edge rusher. Everybody wants excitement, and we need the excitement of the first round being a home run pick, and it's going to be an offensive lineman, not the sexy pick. I think that I would live with that. It was Forrest Lamp. I really like Forrest Lamp. I think I would live with that. If that's the case, I mean, this is a what-if situation. If the Colts go first-round offensive lineman, you better not take Jordan Willis. I mean that honestly. He's going to be a complimentary player in his first season or two. He's not going to be a 10 sack guy. Okay? He might get 10 sacks, and I even wrote this about him that I in an article that I was talking about how much I liked him. He's not a 10 sack annual guy. He's a guy who could get 10 sacks a year or two in his career, but he's not a 10 sack guy. I mean, he's going to be complimentary within the Colts defense. If the Colts were to grab him, you go after a guy that can produce now. And I'm talking produce now in the second round if you do that. That makes no sense whatsoever for Jordan Willis to be the pick. I don't get that. And at that point, if we're at, what, pick 46, is it, that the Colts go in the second round? I'm sorry, there's still going to be enough guys on the board there that the Colts don't go Jordan Willis. If he's their pick in the second round, if that's the best guy on the board at the edge position, they go to another position, plain and simple.
Yeah.
I mean, now third round, wide receiver, I don't even care who the wide receiver is. No. I just don't care. No, that's stupid. Yeah. That makes no sense whatsoever. None of this makes sense. I don't like, you know, I could live with Lamp. I don't love it. I could live with it.
Yeah.
Because it would help in the end. It's not a pick I want to see in the first round in this draft, though. What are yours? What are your thoughts, dude? This makes me want to throw up.
Yeah. I really, when I first saw it, I had to post it to Twitter because I just had such a strong reaction to it. Now, like you said, I can live with Forrest Lamp in the first round because the idea of building something like Dallas and Oakland have tried to build on with their offensive lines, that seems pretty all right to me. Forrest Lamp, Ryan Kelly, Jack Muhort in the middle. Let's say Anthony Costanzo stays the course or maybe gets a little better. LaRaven Clark is going to keep getting better. That sounds like it's going to start to be a pretty good offensive line. I can look at that, like you said.
Right.
But the rest of the draft needs to be it needs to be impactful. Otherwise, at edge rushers, cornerbacks, something. Like, and again, I know it's best player available, but like that is so crazy to take an offensive lineman first, that's fine. But then a pass rusher who's just kind of a guy, and with a second round pick, and then your third round pick is a wide receiver who was pretty gimmicky in college.
Yeah.
So you have taken, you've basically used almost half of your draft on a guy who we're pretty confident is going to be at a Pro Bowl level eventually as a guard. But then two guys otherwise who you don't know how good they're going to be. And if they are going to be good, they're probably not going to be Pro Bowl, all pro level guys. So you've spent almost half your draft almost wasted.
Yeah.
It because you know there will be so much better, faster, more impactful options out there. It's just that haul seems insane to me. I don't like it.
No, I have no idea what he was thinking on that. I really don't. I mean, he's forgotten Kamar Aiken was signed. He's forgotten that the Colts have a legit, you know, four or five wide receivers on the team. Forgotten, you know, and nobody ever remembers the depth when they do these mocks. And I get it. You can't really expect them to. And I'm not trying to act like Quan Bray's the next coming, you know, but he's there and does the kicks. I mean, we love Chester Rogers, and that could be 5 and 6 right there. So if we've got a top four with Hilton, Moncrief, Dorsett, who is better outside of the 25-yard line than people realize, and Aiken, I mean, can we at least do it in the late rounds? I mean, like you said, or like we talked about earlier, 6th or 7th maybe? Mm-hmm. I mean, geez. Man, that makes no sense to me. I can't stand that.
You know, I have to tell people every day. I have to remind people every day that the Colts' offensive line is not going to continue to be the same thing we've seen the last 4 or 5 years. Like, they drafted 4 guys last year. 3 of them became starters.
Right.
And they already had Muhor and Costanzo as established starters. Like, they probably have their starting 5 for next year right now. And it's probably going to be a pretty good unit. And a lot of people don't realize that, at least according to Football Outsiders, the Colts, I think, were number 3 when it comes to offensive line at run blocking. They had the 3rd best run blocking offensive line. They pretty much insinuated that Frank Gore got a lot of his yards based on the offensive line, and he basically just picked up what was there to be had. He didn't make plays on his own. So just imagine if you got a big play running back behind that offensive line. People's perception of that line could change in a hurry, but Andrew Luck has to be a little cleaner. And to be honest, how he plays, he's probably never going to be a guy that gets sacked less than 25 times a year.
Yeah.
It's not always the offensive line's fault. Now, they have not been a perfect pass-blocking line at all. They've been heinous at times. But it's not always their fault. And when you draft 4 rookies in a year, they're not all going to be Joe Thomas year one. They need time to grow and develop. Like, you can't just keep drafting offensive linemen early and often every year and just keep plugging different guys in constantly and expect to get a winning formula. At some point, you have to let guys play together. You have to let guys develop and see playing time. Look at LaRaven Clark. He looked just holy crap in the preseason. Like,
yeah, no, awful.
Yeah, no way can you let this guy see the field in the regular season.
Right.
Week 13 or week 14, something like that, whenever they played the Vikings. Turns out with so many injuries, he has to start at right tackle. We were literally talking about if they should sit Andrew Luck because of that.
Right.
They were facing the Vikings, who had a hell of a pass rush behind a terrible offensive line. And you know what? LaRaven Clark went out there and he kind of kicked ass the last few weeks. He had a rough game against Oakland, but considering how terrible he looked in the preseason, that shows great promise that he's going to develop into a dependable player at least.
Yeah, and not only that. Now, I think that Philbin being there again this year is going to help that.
That's going to be awesome, I think.
I do too. I mean, I just see that as much as we saw from him as far as his coaching style and getting around to these guys last year, I think that that helps a ton. And I mean, if they were to and it would be nice, don't get me wrong, it would be nice to see them bring in another top level offensive lineman to really shore up that offensive line. That would increase depth a ton. And we end up seeing, like you said, I think, and I have said it on this podcast many times before, that I expect the Colts to be a top 5 to 10 offensive line in the next couple seasons. I just do, as long as everybody stays healthy, healthy, of course. But it just, I mean, that's just what I see on there. I get sick and tired of people talking about Costanzo as if he's awful and overrated. Overrated compared to what? He's still a top 10 left tackle in the league, is he not?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be Tyron Smith or Joe Thomas or Trent Williams. Like, you got a guy who you can depend on to start at left tackle and protect your franchise quarterback's blind side week in and week out. He's probably not going to win matchups against Von Miller and elite pass rushers, but who does?
Right. Yeah. And not only that, I mean, Muhort there at left guard. I mean, then Kelly should take a significant jump as far as I'm concerned, even to where how he played last year. Right guard, you know, who's there? And right tackle, who's there? But you've got about 4 or 5 guys that are going to be fighting for it. And that's key. I mean, that's key right there, because not only that, but you've got the fight for just about everything. And when you've got that along your offensive line, and I think you could plug in 2 or 3 or 4 guys there, to be quite honest with you, between the Raven Clark, Joe Haig, you know, Denzel Good. I know that he kind of stunk it up a little bit last year, but I still got promise for him. I mean, I still think he's going to be decent. And if the Colts were to grab a guy like Forrest Lamp in that position, then wow, I mean, you've got an insane amount of depth along that offensive line. So that would be the reason why I would be cool with that in the first round. I mean, it wouldn't be the ideal pick for me, but I would be cool with it, because that would be literally one entire area of the team that does not need to be talked about anymore.
Right. It would be fine with me, because it would work and it would not be overkill. You know what I mean? If I'm remembering correctly, when they drafted Dorsett, they had just invested so much in wide receivers over the last couple years.
Yeah.
And it seemed kind of crazy. With this, Forrest Lamp would probably start right away. It would work. Like, I don't think anyone thinks Forrest Lamp is going to suck in the NFL. Like, I think he's going to be a pretty good guard. So that would work. And they don't have so many bodies already there where it's a log jam.
Here's the legit thing. If you think about it this way, too, if let's say they do take Forrest Lamp, and then you've got, what, Haig, probably Good would be end up being the backup at the guard. But then you've got Haig and Clark battling for that right tackle spot, more than likely. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, so after that, what do you got? You got 3 guys that are either starting, or I'm sorry, 4 guys, if that's the case. You've either got them starting or are backups, all on their rookie contracts. That's a lot of cheap people. Then your center's on a rookie contract. Your left guard's about to be up for another contract. He's been injured a little bit. I don't think he's going to make a ton of money. He's not going to break the bank. But, I mean, that gives the Colts a little bit of leeway as well if Muhort can't stay healthy this season. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean just to fill in, but I mean as in, you know, if they were to allow him to walk, for example. Okay, let's say Ballard's not high on him and he allows him to walk. The Colts are still in pretty good shape.
Yeah. You could just move Lamp over to left guard and then Haig goes to right guard and Clark at right tackle. You would have an answer.
Right, that's what I mean. There's a lot of reasons to get on board with that. I don't know that it'll ever be the ideal pick, because, like I said, we like shiny things, and offensive linemen are not shiny.
Right.
Yeah, so Who's the guy that you like? I mean, give me your top five guys. I mean, just your top five, period. Not that the Colts might get. Give me your top five guys that you just love. Your top five man crush prospects for this draft.
Everything's got to start with Reuben Foster. I talk about him all the time. I really like Malik McDowell. And I'm pretty happy to see that the Colts have taken an interest in him as well. Dalvin Cook, I don't care about the testing. It does not wipe out what I've seen him do since he was a freshman at Florida State. Don't care about what's been said about him at all. I've seen too much awesome stuff. I've seen too much young Edgerrin James in him. Let's see. Really like Marlon Humphrey. And I really like Jamal Adams. Unfortunately, it never matters how high your team is picking. Unless they're number one, there will always be players out of your range. And to me, that's, you know, Jamal Adams and probably Reuben Foster. But I mean, those are my guys. I've really enjoyed watching them play. Whether the Colts can get them or not, I'm not planning on it. But those are probably my five guys. What are yours?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I have five guys that I just want the Colts to get. I like a ton of people, to be honest with you, in this draft. I think the Colts could nab him if they traded back, but I obviously love Tyus Bowser. Absolutely love his skill set. I like Carl Lawson. Like him a lot. Probably like him a lot more than other people do. I love Derek Rivers. I like Humphrey as well. I like Gerrion Conley. I like Cordrea Tankersley, aside from his run support. I like a lot of his coverage stuff at corner from Clemson. I really like Jared Davis a ton. I think the three-year projection, he's a better inside linebacker or equal to as Reuben Foster. That's just what I see personally, mm-hmm. just because of the guy's work ethic and his brains and everything else. If we're going to go defensive line, I really like Chris Wormley a ton. I really think that he's got a lot of versatility, and the Colts love versatility, whether, you know, regardless who the GM is, Colts love versatility. Every team loves versatility. So, I mean, those are just a handful of guys. If the Colts are at 15 and if they're going to go edge rusher and Barnett's not off the board, I want them to swing at Barnett. I really like him as well.
Yeah.
He's just a guy that I think is so natural about the way he goes about his pass rush, always finds a way into the backfield, no matter what. I really think Wormley's a good, I'm not counting against McDowell's, as far as his chatter or whatever. I don't know that it's much ado about nothing. I don't know that it's a big deal. I just am not on board with guys who give, you know, half-assed effort basically in most games. That's just not my style. That's not what I want to see. But those guys sometimes are the guys who explode at the next level. So I'm very reserved about him. I think he's got a ton of talent. And I think that if they can harness that, he's going to be a phenomenal player up front. But he's just not my guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, I'm going to try not to read into what people say, what people do. I just didn't see him giving a bunch of effort in a lot of games, and I just don't dig that. I never have. And I think we've talked about that in the past. That's just one of the things that turned me off considerably against guys. So I like Terrell Basham as a mid-round or, you know, at least a late day two edge guy. Really like him. Have liked him for quite a while. You know, I'm not a big fan of the inside linebacker at Ohio State. For some reason, his name's... Yes. Not a huge fan of him. I don't think that he's bad. I don't think that he, I certainly just don't think that he's great. And so he's just a guy that kind of just fell off my radar. I was like, he's like you said about Willis, he's just a guy to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm okay with that. But there's so many guys. Maybe one of my biggest hot takes ever is that I can't stand watching Obi Melifonwu play. I can't. I just don't know what it is about that guy. I think that he's solid in run support, not great. I see him at least three times on tape, and even some of the All-22 tape that I have access to, I have seen him run right by a ball carrier who's not falling down, not being tackled, and I have no idea what in the hell he's doing. It just makes no sense to me. I don't think he's great in coverage, anything that's over his head. I think that a lot of the balls that he intercepted or the ones that he had defended on, that he knocked down because they were basically high pop, you know, pop-ups to him like a center fielder in baseball. Anything he has to turn and run for, he doesn't ever look for the ball, ever. And projection wise, maybe a 3-year projection's great. Right now, I don't see him being a first round, legit first round talent. Now, first round talent 3 years from now, probably. You know what I'm saying? I just don't know. I don't know really what he's going to turn into. He's got a lot of skills that I think need a lot of refinement as far as I'm concerned. But man, his frame and his athleticism is super sexy. You know, there's just no way about it. You just can't turn that off. You can't take that away from the guy. But like I said, ton of guys. I mean, I like a bunch of them. So, you know, Jake, we're sitting right at about an hour right now, my guy. But as usual, you and I could probably go for hours on this. But eventually people are going to want to go to another show on their podcast network. So we're going to have to get out of here soon. But, man, thanks for stopping by. It was great to talk to you again. We're going to do this every week, guys. Jake's going to be here every week. We're going to do it probably the same day every week. It's a great way to get into the second half of our week as well, and I hope it is for you guys too. So, Jake, thanks for stopping by, dude. I've yet to be able to name this segment. But we're going to, more of a segment, more like the show. I don't know whether to call it the King's Court because of the last name with Jake Arthur, King's Arthur. You know, I don't know what to do with it, but maybe my listeners will throw some intelligent options my way. So
I've got faith in them.
We'll see. Yeah. But thanks, dude, for stopping by, man. It was great talking to you.
No, man. Thanks for having me. And I really appreciate the platform. I'm really glad a guy like you has got this show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, and this is a good time for me because a lot of the guys that I always bounce off thoughts or just whatever, a guy like you that I, like I said, that I'm in constant contact with anyway, you know, it's great to just have you on here and talk and actually have it go on the podcast. So thanks, man, and every time and any time, it's always great to talk to you anyway. But thank you guys for listening to Jake and I sit here and spitball for an hour. We appreciate you guys joining us. And make sure you guys are going to iTunes, giving the show a rating and a review. Make sure you guys are using that call-in feature that I've got. Like I said, 574-516-2881. Get your calls in, guys. You're going to get a $35 to $40 value draft guide here for free from NDT Scouting and Inside the Pylon. I don't know what more you could ask for. All you want to do is call in. I mean, I'm not going to lie, we don't have a ton of call-ins right now. So if you want to have a good chance of getting one of these, get your calls in. Chances are pretty high that you're going to be a winner if you get in there. I mean, we're giving away four. So get your guys' phones out, dial, leave a voicemail, ask Jake and I or me or George or whoever is on the show that day. We'll answer it. And ask a question, and you go from there, then you're automatically entered. So it's not that hard. Get yourselves in there. It'd be great to get more response from you guys. Jake, thanks again, my man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you guys all tomorrow right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team. Every day.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.